before the bloodbath begins, slither your way over to the host's socials. For the podcast, slash over to Twitter at the BHO underscore podcast. Instagram, the Baron's Hideout podcast. Then stab over to Dean's Instagram at Dean of the Dead Hot Sauce. Listen to the show on your favorite apps and Patreon. Enjoy the slay and try to stay alive. For the next period of time, strap in as the hosts rip and tear at the unsuspecting guests, in which they learn their dark secrets and methods of the genre. In this bloodbath, no one gets out alive. This is Within the Barons.
Dustin, and joining us today are the two responsible for the most brutal film I have seen all year. We have Benjamin Jung Clark. We're here to talk about Beaten to Death and what it's like to be inside someone's head. Sam, Ben, how are you both doing?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having us.
It's great to be on board.
Yeah, I mean, thank you guys for being here, and also huge thanks to Welcome Villain for getting this set up and bringing the film to my attention. I know that there was a release in the States over here, and one thing that it's really, really cool this year, especially the last few months, is the amount of Australian films that have been making its way over to the States. You know, we had like Talk to Me. There's another one that this came out that's on Shudder. I mean, on Screenbox right now, called Subject, and we have Beaten to Death. And I kind of wanted to, you know, talk about that before we start jumping into some of the other questions. But what is it like for the both of you to be getting out to the world?
Well, I think speaking for both of us, I think it was like a bit of like a real dream for us to get the release that we did get in the US. So as you mentioned, Welcome Villain, they've just done a phenomenal release, putting us in cinemas, and for a movie such as ours to come from such a small micro budget, it's a dream come true. But as far as Australian horror making waves, it's really cool, and it's kind of been unexpected, because like Australian horror's always done its thing, and I think it's been reasonably well regarded, but it's usually just sort of, I don't know, like maybe one a year kind of seems to break through, but then to have all of these movies all of a sudden, like I think it's a great thing. And we actually read an article a few days ago where they were discussing, like, what was it, Benny, the new wave of Australian horror or something like that. Which mentioned all of the movies that you've just mentioned. Another great one coming out called The Eastfield Exorcism, which has been going really well as well. So, yeah, it's cool. And we're happy to, if we are a part of a new horror wave, then, yeah, bring it on.
Hell yeah.
I'm just stoked as well. Like, back to Talk to Me. I'm so happy that has been front and center in a lot of people's minds, even further than just the horror fan community as well. The release that's been getting and the attention has just been excellent. And, you know, props to those guys for getting out there and doing it. And it's great to be having this wave of Australian horror that's getting out there and getting recognized by people as well. I know with our previous releases, we'd get it released on DVD in different places around the world, but to get theatrical in America was pretty crazy for us.
And I was talking to the director of Subject, Tristan Barr, and I was talking to him about this too, because I was listening to some interviews of other, you know, Australian filmmakers, especially, you know, the brothers of Talk to Me, saying that when it comes to Australian filmmaking in general, it's really hard for it to branch out because it's so, I guess it doesn't take well in other parts of the world. And it's really, really cool to finally see it break out and to have these companies kind of come in and show more Australian film, whether it's horror or anything else. It's so cool because I love the landscapes that's in Australia, and this film has got some landscapes. You know, it's beautiful. So congrats on the both of you and everybody on this film for, you know, getting a Welcome Villain, getting a release over here, getting people talking about it. You know, it's absolutely awesome.
Thank you. Well, yeah, we, Ben and I both actually listened to your interview that you had with Tristan.
Okay.
And so, yeah, like him and his team have done phenomenal as well, like getting onto Screenbox and just being able to be out there so quickly for so many eyes is awesome. Australian film in general has always had that a bit of a challenge where, because it's an English-speaking nation, we're competing with America essentially.
Yeah.
But then there is that slight barrier of the accent.
I love it though.
But yeah. But the great thing about horror is that horror fans can so easily look past that, you know. I mean, a good movie is a good movie, but horror fans especially, they don't care where their horror is from, you know. Like the biggest foreign film fans would probably also be horror fans, you know. We don't care where you make it so long as it's good.
Yeah, exactly. So other than that, what I always like to do with our guests, which you've listened to the interview, so you know how I kind of like to kind of go around with my my questions, is kind of bringing it all the way back and asking where it all began. So Sam, let's start with you. Where did the love of filmmaking and writing, you know, kind of start with you?
Yeah, I guess it's a pretty familiar tale for a lot of filmmakers, where you grow up going to the video shop and getting all the weekly movies, and then eventually the family gets a video camera, so you start messing around. But I guess it started to get more serious when Ben and I actually met, as well as Tom Roach. So we all went to high school together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and so, you know, we were three nerdy boys, and those guys knew each other already, and they took me under their wing, and we all just bonded over movies, and specifically horror movies. And then it just sort of went from there. Like, we were running around with cameras and doing a little horror movies, and we seemed to always be dressing Benny up in these big elaborate costumes. So one time he was a Minotaur, one time he was like a King Kong saving the world type
That's awesome.
Thing. Yeah, and so I think the fact that we started out as friends and we're still working together, like, it's a great relationship, and it's great to be able to, you know, see where the movie's going and be able to share that together. You know, we can look back at 20 years ago when we met and be like, yeah, look at us.
Yeah, that's awesome. What about you, Ben? Other than what Sam has mentioned, is there anything else that kind of sparked your interest in film?
Well, yeah, I guess before our paths aligned between me and Sam, it was the same for me. I was at the video store all the time as a child. I was real lucky in my hometown. I had a video store that was nice enough to allow you to get 18 rated movies as a child, so long as it was a horror or an action.
Okay.
So my mind was wide open from a young age. And I remember the first time in my memory that I wanted to get into filmmaking was I wrote a sequel to The Monster Squad on Commodore 64 as a 9 or a 10 year old. And that was kind of like my first foray into, big dreams, big aspirations. And it wasn't really until, myself and Roach met up with Sam. And I remember, Curlo, was our first short that we did that stop motion animation?
Oh, yeah.
So we did a stop motion animation. It was actually for school itself. And
it was
that
for
was
computer
kind
graphics,
of
a computer graphics course when they had us doing stop motion claymation.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I don't know what was going on there, but hey, it helped solidify what we were going to be doing for the next few years with our short films.
Wow, that's crazy. Mm. Like anytime I hear filmmakers start or do anything with stop motion or claymation is insane, because that, to me, I feel like that's more difficult than, you know, directing somebody, because you have to make sure everything's placed right, take a shot, move it, take a shot, and it could take forever. So wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and this little show we did, it was just like a 30-second thing of like a bloke shooting zombies and like smushing heads and running them over. So it was probably a good indication of where we're going to go from there.
Yeah. Yeah,
all the gore was tomato sauce.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's perfect.
Canteen. Yeah,
absolutely perfect. Okay, I guess we can move on to how Welcome Villain got involved. Were you guys showing this somewhere at like a film festival where they saw it, or did you reach out to them saying, hey, we have a film that we think would be kind of cool underneath your belt? Or like how did that kind of come about?
They came in really early on, actually. Like the movie was done and we played at a festival. We had our premiere in Australia at a festival called A Night of Horror. But not much of the world was aware of our little movie at that point. And I think somewhere, feel free to fill in the blanks here, Benny, they came across the title of the movie and were like, this sounds interesting, we'd like to know more. So they got in contact, we sent them a screener, and off we went.
Wow.
Yeah, Benny? From memory, I think Luke's, because we asked at the time, I think he said he saw a tweet about our movie from someone, maybe we'd played in New York already.
Okay, yep.
And he was like, hey, I love the title, can I see a screener of this? And he was just like, yeah, okay, sure. And then it was just full steam ahead. They saw it and they loved it, gave us a call. And it seemed like a genuine love for it as well, as opposed to a sales pitch, which has always been a great thing about dealing with these guys, is that they are genuine fans of the genre and the craft. And it's been a blast having them on board.
Yeah, they're taking really good care of this film. They sent it to me, oh my God, a couple of weeks ago, I think, right before it was going to be released into theaters. And I watched it and I couldn't keep my eyes away from how crazy this film goes, because right as soon as it starts, you're in it. Like, you have no time to breathe. And I love films that are like that. You know, they make you think a little bit too, like, why are we here? What's going on? I mean, it gets unfolded as it goes on and on and on. But just seeing how brutal it is. And I have a thing for, if I'm going to watch a brutal film, I'm expecting it to be a good story behind everything that's going on. And this one has a solid story. It's really sad. You know, I'm seeing the characters go through everything. And then seeing Jack essentially just go insane. You don't know what's reality. You don't know what he's actually seeing. And that it really, you know, goes home at the very end when you see all these other hallucinations, essentially, of what you think is the ending. Like, oh, okay, so he's there now, but he's not. But oh wait, no, he is there. Oh no, he's not. Like, you keep giving it to us and you take it away. It's like we're being stabbed, you know, while watching this. And it's beautiful. And being able to feel like almost what he's feeling in his mind while watching this film, I think is absolutely brilliant. So the writing with both of you and then putting it to screen, I think you nailed it. Like 100% nailed it.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I mean, a huge part of the movie, like, never mind our writing and sort of mine and Benny's shared vision, like, Thomas Roach was best on ground for our movie. Like, the entire movie essentially hinges on Tom's performance, and without that, it wouldn't have been the movie that it is. You know, it's like, for anyone that has seen the movie, they know that Roach goes there 110%.
Yeah.
He really gives it his all. So, huge part of it is Tom.
Hell yeah.
I think as well, we can't ignore like the supporting cast as well. They all just bring it for you know, like Dave Tracy as Brutal. Ned. I've seen reviews online of people absolutely raving about him, and they're like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? I reckon it's just excellent how they're just getting this kind of recognition for what's going on there. And Justin Wagner and Nicole Tudor as well. We were just so happy with how everyone was during the shoot. Coming from ultra low budget independent filmmaking, you know, sometimes the actors that you get just aren't quite right for the role, but that's just
hard to find cast. It can be hard to find cast resources.
Yeah, everyone here just knocked it out of the park and was just on board with what we were doing from the very get-go.
Yeah, and everybody really did bring it, but, you know, my God, it's so beautifully brutal. It is, like, this, the shots that are there, the way that you're capturing, like, the clouds and everything surrounding it, even the houses that are all, you know, torn apart, and seeing he's in such a rundown area, going from this nice house that he was in, and then he has to do this one thing, you know, to kind of go on and to, you know, live essentially, which ends up, you know, doing the opposite, which is so sad. You know, people always, you hear these stories of people like losing their lives to something, you know, or having to do something really, really hard and hoping that the outcome is going to be positive. And this is, you know, essentially that of, you know, a couple doing this one thing to benefit themselves, to kind of push them in a positive direction, which just backfires so hard. And it goes all the way there. You guys don't hold back at all. And I appreciate that, because I feel like with especially indie directors, some of them are a little afraid to kind of go over that edge, except for maybe like the last year or so. There's been a lot of like boundary pushing when it comes to writing and direction. And in this film, it's like you're at like 200% from the very beginning. There is no dialing it back, even when you're going and telling why they're here, why they got there. Like, even that is like, you know, after seeing everything and then realizing like where they were, and like they could have been fine, they were there, they could have figured out a different way to do what they needed to do, but instead that's also stabbing you, because you know exactly where it's bringing them. Like, what a great way of telling a story.
Thank you. Well, yeah, even with Jack's motivation to put themselves in the situation that they end up in, even with that, we wanted it to be like a real gray area where he's not completely innocent in why this has come about. He took a huge risk and it hasn't paid off. So you certainly don't feel like he deserved it, but we haven't given the audience the feeling of that it's completely unjustified. I mean, the guy getting his eyes gouged out is never justified.
That was brutal.
But it sort of operates in a bit of a gray area, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. As far as the locations and the sets and stuff like that, like, again, like a big part of this is budgetary restraints, but we're big believers in shooting in real settings. So with the old farmhouses, like, that's all 100% real. We didn't need to bring a single thing in that was just real dirt, real dust, real bird shit coming down the walls. and it adds such an excellent quality to it, because I don't think that if you were to production design that stuff that you'd be able to get anywhere near the authenticity and that kind of gritty realness that it has. And there's one part in particular that we think is funny, where just after, spoiler alerts, he's killed one of the bad guys, he's sitting down crying, and there's just like a whippersnapper in the background, and it just looks like kind of, in the kitchen. Yeah, and it's just like kind of so oddly out of place, but just works so brilliantly for kind of the randomness of these locations.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to talk a little bit about the writing process. And Ben, I want to start with you. Kind of writing into somebody's mind of them going essentially insane and then thinking that they're making it out of here and they're blind. So what was it like trying to get into that headspace for this character?
It was a bit weird. I remember like trying to get into Jack's head. We did a bit of research on what it's like to be blind, but to have vision originally and then go to be blind. And so it helped us get into his head in that way. But a lot of it we write remotely, kind of like over web chat, and we take it in shifts from time to time. But a lot of it was just us kind of talking through the scene, talking through the scenario, and not always thinking, okay, this guy doesn't have any eyes, but just how would he react, and then factor in the no eyes after it.
Yeah, because his performance, I feel like, is great in seeing how he's trying to find his way, and he's still acting like he can see, but you know that he can't. I mean, he is in this giant, you know, open field most of the time, and he's just hoping he gets somewhere. But the direction that Jack was going in on that and everything, I think, was brilliant. But Sam, mm-hmm. what's I want to ask the same question for you. What was it like, you know, kind of bouncing off the ideas that Ben was shooting you for, you know, kind of writing into his mind?
Well, this one was particularly fun to write because when Benny and I write, we do this thing where we're constantly trying to one-up one another. So like, yeah, so like Benny might come up with some crazy thing and then I'll try to top that and then he'll try to top that. And it just sort of goes from there. And especially with this movie where there were kind of no rules and we really felt like we were just writing to this like pure vision that we had, since it was all self-funded and it was produced by ourselves, it was just whatever we wanted to do, we could do. And felt like we wrote a story where we could just kind of go wild with it and be like kind of experimental at times or like overly stylized. And that's, you know, like whether that's the writing or in the direction of it. And so stuff like the black, when he has had his eyes gouged out and then it's just like pure blackness for a couple of minutes. I think when we kind of click to something like that, that's when it's like, oh yeah, that could be really cool. But also Benny and I think we complement each other well as writers too. And I love seeing what crazy stuff Benny's going to come up with. Like Benny writes the best monologues in the world, as far as I'm concerned. There you go.
Thank you.
So like at the start of the movie where he's giving the headshots monologue and Benny wrote that and sent that through, and I was just like, where the hell did this come from? Like, did you steal this from something? And he was like, no man, I just thought it up. And it like just blew my mind. And there's a few scenes of characters giving monologues, and I just like to sit back and watch them performed and listen to Benny's beautiful words about pedophiles.
Hell yeah, man.
But I think it helps as well with the writing. Well, was that okay?
I was just, for anyone that's seen the movie, we'll get the reference.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I think what really helps with the writing process as well is that we had Tom in mind from the very start. We'd worked with him before, like we'd known him for many, many years, and kind of just crafting this role around his strengths really helped with the process entirely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And just knowing that what Roach is going to be capable of as a performer and physically as well, and being a close friend, we sort of not knew where we could, what direction we could push that in, I think.
Yeah. I imagine he was okay being covered in blood throughout the entire film.
Like, well, he loved it.
Barely any scene of him with any blood on. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask too about how long was the shooting process of this? Like, how many days or weeks did it take to complete it?
Initially, it was quite short. It was going to be 10 days and then a few weekends, but then that blew out, as it often does. And then it was during COVID as well, so that sort of threw things out a little bit as well. And then the seasons changed, and so then things weren't matching. So in the end, it was sort of over a year-long process because of that. And I think it was about 30 days shooting in the end, which sort of is quite a lot for a movie like this. But there were some times where we just have to go out to the location for, you know, one scene, like the sunrise scene at the start. That was shot over 2 days. So that's two shooting days gone. Yeah, so, and then all in all, I think from concept to completion, the movie was probably a year and a half.
Wow.
Production, yeah.
Wow. Well, you definitely took the time to polish this up and make it look extremely beautiful, even though it's really gritty. But I like that aesthetic of how gritty the film is and the surrounding areas. It really, like, brings it back to what it was like in, like, the 70s, you know, with, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It really has that vibe. Which captured so well with also, you know, being its own thing and showing his own sceneries and, you know, seeing all these really brutal, you know, moments of people really getting beaten to death, literally. and, you know, seeing these characters try to make it out, or, you know, following Jack, and then having that little bit of relief, like, okay, he found somebody else, and then you realize that this somebody else may have been linked to this other person, and then it just keeps going and going, and it's like, oh, he can't get a break. He's here, and you're rooting for him at the end, being like, yes, okay, he's right there, he's gonna be fine, and then, you know, things may go somewhere else. It's beautiful and so sad. But, like, again, I'm so happy to have seen a film like this and to experience the emotions that I did throughout this film. Because half of the time when I'm watching a horror movie, whether it's a slasher or whatnot, it's like, yeah, blood, gore, yeah, it's awesome, I love it. But with there being some heart behind it, it makes it that much more special. So I'm so happy to have seen this, have releases here in the States, and seeing other people talk about it, and also being reached out to view this and to talk to both of you, because this is brilliant. It's always really fun to pick the brains of the people behind these brutal movies and realizing, oh, they're just normal guys. No, they're not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah, but normally quite often when you do interviews that isn't coming from, you know, a place of a horror platform or whatever, they'll always be like, so why horror movies?
Yeah, yeah, then it's exactly.
Like, they expect you to be some kind of like weirdo or something. It was, oh, they make horror movies. But yeah, I swear to God, 99.99% of horror filmmakers just regular guys and gals.
Yep.
But go ahead. Yeah, mentioning Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that was a big influence, because in a lot of ways that sort of kicked off this style of movie of going into the, you know, the outback or the woods or whatever, and coming across some nasty locals. But yeah, with that movie in particular, the production design is phenomenal, and it is really beautiful. There's like a lot of shots where it's like late in the day, sunsets and that kind of stuff. But I think 70s movies in general were quite an influence for that real down and dirty grittiness. Last House on the Left was another one. Oh, yeah. But then also what we find, what we found really appealing as well was the French New Extreme and the influence that had.
Oh, yeah.
Because those movies are just,
I can only watch those like once, and I can't watch them again because of how ridiculous they can go.
Yeah, like, they tear out your soul. And yeah, that's what we kind of wanted to do with this, where like there's a real like emotional side to them, where they can be like quite nihilistic as well. And we wanted Tom to really experience his like this existential angst of like whether he'll survive, and if he does survive, is it worth everything that he's gone through?
Yeah. And there is that one scene where he completely breaks down. I think it's so beautiful seeing him go in this area and calling out to, you know, essentially his mom, which, you know, I feel like anybody at that state, you kind of go back to your childhood and realizing what felt safe, you know, when you were there. What can you still call upon and feel safe? It's usually always a parent or somebody that was always there for you when you were younger. And like that hit me really hard. Like he's literally at the end, and it seeing and hearing him, his whole body is just, it's done. You know, it's just, it just wants that one last thing to know that everything is going to be okay. And that scene particularly like really hit me.
Yeah, definitely. And in that scene as well, we tried to tie it back with the earlier scene as well, where he's singing the song of when he first met Rachel. And so, yeah, it is that thing where he's just like, it's whether it's guilt, it's regret, where he just wants it to go back to how it was, but he knows that it can't ever go. It can't ever go back to that because he has received such a horrendous injury and he's out away from everyone and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, unfortunately. So I want to go to a couple of fun questions. I'll start with Ben. Is there a particular scene in here that you are extremely fond of and you were like, yes, we nailed that. I wrote that and this looks way better on screen.
I mean, there's lots of that in the movie where it was just like page to screen, exactly what we envisioned. But one thing that really stands out for me is the shots where Tom vomits.
Scenes you could pick.
I was doing sound for the movie. So as he was kind of getting ready for it, I've got the microphone pointed at him and I could just, because he really did it, he really vomited. I could hear it go up through his body and that is a sound that will stay in my brain until the day I die, and it's not a sound I ever want to hear again.
Oh wow! Yeah,
can you make the sound for the listeners?
No, but I mean, I started gagging, and other people started gagging.
I would have thrown up if I see someone throw up. I will throw up.
Yeah, yeah,
that's me.
But that was just yes, this is a filthy little film that we are making here.
What about you, Sam?
I actually thought that Benny was going to go with the sunrise scene because that's your usual go-to.
Oh, I love it. It's incredible. I remember in the script, we just had like a photo in there as well, a screenshot of THX.
Yeah. So in the script, because we, we were writing for ourselves, we didn't need to format it in a traditional way. And so in that scene, we had like a description of the scene and then just a screenshot from, have you seen the movie THX 1138? George Lucas's first movie.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's a shot at the end of that where he's like, he comes out of the ground, he's like standing in front of this like big, beautiful sunrise or sunset. So yeah, it was actually probably, that was my favorite thing to shoot. And when we got that back, we were like, yes, we got it, because that particular shot was all in camera. So we were standing on a hill, Tom was standing on a hill a few hundred meters away, and we had a camera with a big long lens. And when you zoomed in that much, just any little bump on the camera, it'll just go crazy and shake. And you've just got to like, to get the framing right, you've got to have just like pinpoint accuracy, like any little movement of the tripod will throw it right out. And so that was one that we really had to work for, where we needed the right conditions. And the perfect location. And so on the day on the evening that we went to do it, we were all set up. We had Tom in position. We had the radios. I was lined up. The sun's coming down. We were waiting around an hour for the sun to get into the right spot. And then as the sun's coming down, I'm like fiddling around with the camera. And then the sun goes behind the mountain. And we're like, shit, we didn't get it.
Oh, no.
And then we realized, hang on, we're on a hill. We can run up the hill and go again. So we ran up the hill, we tried again, we didn't get it. We ran up higher, we tried again, didn't get it. And so then eventually after about 5 or 6 times of doing this, we managed to get it. And then that's what you see in the movie. And so, yeah, I think that because I love the shot and the fact that we had to work so damn hard for it, that one was probably the most rewarding.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Seeing that on the big screen just blows my mind every time as well. I just want to applaud myself.
Yeah. I mean, this film, like I said earlier, it has so many beautiful shots in it, and it's such a, you know, harsh film to watch, but seeing the scenery around him and seeing it is really beautiful, even though it's kind of run down, but like it's how it's supposed to be in this area and where he's supposed to be, and capturing that on screen and hearing that story about what you said about that one shot, is awesome. And that was another question I was going to ask, is like, what was the most difficult shot you had to do? And I guess that would probably be the one right there.
yeah. But if I could pick another one, I suppose getting the eye gouge stuff right was really important too, like that whole scene, because we wanted that to be like our big scene, you know, because we thought, hey, if we can nail this right, then that can get people talking. And so when you have all the moving pieces of that, and there were several parts to it as well, and, you know, trying to not only get through the scene and get the performances right, but just the makeup effects as well. Now, makeup artist Danica did a phenomenal job on throughout the whole movie. There were multiple parts to it. There was the scene itself, and then there were cutaways of, there was a I can never remember, a pig's eye, I think, that we put in a fake head. And,
oh, nice.
And the appliance that we made where it's like the POV that he stabs into the eye. So seeing all of those parts come together in that scene the way that they did, I think that was pretty rewarding too.
Yeah. What about you, Ben? Was there anything, you know, on your end that you thought was difficult to do?
Those are the two that instantly come to mind for myself as well. But I guess like part of just the day to day of it, part of what was difficult was just seeing Roach in the character at all times. Like even if we weren't filming, it was hard to watch him sitting there. And he's since said that he felt very isolated because he was blind for a lot of it. He didn't feel connected in the way that the rest of us crew were on those days where he was blind. And so you can kind of see it in him. And like every time he gets to walk up, they're like, are you okay, Roach? And he'd be like, yeah, I'm okay. But you could tell if something was going on in his mind, you know? And I think that just helped for the character. But at the same time, you feel bad for your mate.
Yeah.
I love it that you're like, oh, the worst part was seeing Roach looking sad. Roach would be listening to this and being like, well, I was the one that was
sad. I was the one that's in character, bro. Well,
you could see.
I had to put myself here for your jacket. Film. You did this to me, Ben. Yeah, no. Props to everybody, you know, especially him for putting his mind and his actual soul and everything into this role. And I really hope that the people who have seen this or the people who are going to see it, they really feel what he's going through because he really puts everything there. Like, there's not one, like, I want to say beautiful thing about it because everything, it's so ugly, but it's ugly for a purpose because of where he is. I guess there could be beauty in there, but to see somebody get ready for a role, especially for a role like this, and to hear that, you know, he's bringing himself low so that way he's feeling like Jack throughout this whole film. Like, yeah, it's sad, but like, man, you deserve an award, you know, honestly, for bringing yourself through all this. And for you guys writing such a great script and building on a character going through hell and getting beaten to death.
Also for Roach, sorry, I didn't mean to jump
in. Good.
Also for Tom was the fact that we did shoot it over a year or so, and It's all well and good to be able to focus for, you know, that initial shoot of 10 days, but there were times when it was months in between, and then we'd go out and shoot on a Saturday or a Sunday, and then like he'd just have to like get back into it, and he could. He just could.
Man.
Roach doesn't have any like formal training as an actor, and so I think that makes it
that
even
surprises me.
Yeah, so I think it makes it even more special because he's obviously able to tap into something which is like it's very like raw, but I think that the way that he can communicate, the way that he feels through his performance, like it really, you really feel it, and it really is resonating with people.
Yeah, for sure. And I really hope that he works with you guys more, because I want to see him in more films. I want to see more messed up films, but with him not being the one that has to go through hell, I want him to be a killer.
well, funnily enough, our first movie, Blood Hunt, which came out in 2017, he actually plays the lead bad guy in that, and it's a very different performance.
All right.
So he's essentially the Ned of our first movie, Blood Hunt. So, check that out if you came to see Thomas Wright.
Definitely going to, because I did go through your IMDb really, really fast before. So I was like, what else have they done? And I was like, oh, there is more films. So I'm definitely going to go check them out. But I guess we can kind of end off on this one is asking, what else is in the pipeline right now? Are you both working on anything together or anything solo or... Anything at all? I guess we can start with you.
Yeah, I don't think that we want to work solo. I think that we're a package deal wherever we go. At the moment, we've been talking about a few little ideas of what to do next, but we're just sort of trying to ride out the release of Beaten to Death. We want to stay focused on that and make sure that we're, you know, available and can push it as much as we can. We're still working in horror. We've got some more down and dirty ideas.
Yes.
But we want to try a few new things because our first few movies, they're all, we think of them as kind of like a loose trilogy because they all kind of are set within similar locations, deal with like pretty similar themes and stuff like that. So what we do from here will be a little bit of a departure. Like, you know, we'll still stay true to ourselves and our down and dirty roots.
Hell yeah.
But we want to try some new stuff too.
Yes. What about you, Ben? Do you have any ideas that you haven't told Sam yet?
No, like, I mean, Sam and I, we have multiple calls a week just to chat movies and ideas. Like, it's like every Tuesday night, Thursday night and Saturday, we're on the phone talking about things here and there. But as he said, like, we're a package deal. And yes, we're trying to ride out this beaten to death train that's going on at the moment, because we kind of realized that with our previous films, we'd push them out there and then it was instant, okay, what next? And we weren't kind of going along for the ride with them, almost like neglecting them in a way. It's the only word I can really think of. But yeah, we want to really focus on what's happening with Beaten to Death at the moment. But yeah, when we do have something come out next, it's going to be a bit of a departure. But as you said, we know our roots. We know what we're going for here. But yeah, we're excited to see what that brings.
Hell yeah. I'm excited. Like, I'm always really intrigued and excited to see with the people that I've talked to on the show, like, what they're going to be doing next. And even going back and watching the older films, if I haven't seen them already. So I'm excited. Another really fun question. Ben, I'll start with you. What is your favorite horror movie? I know it's a tough one.
I have two. One is a viewer and one as a filmmaker. My favorite horror movie as a viewer is The Exorcist. It's just
nice
perfection
choice.
Like, it's incredible. I absolutely love it so much. But as a filmmaker, it's got to be The Evil Dead. So often in high school, I had the DVD and I would be watching the behind the scenes stuff. I'd be listening to the audio commentary with Raimi and Tapert. I'd be listening to the second audio commentary with Bruce Campbell. I lived and breathed that movie through high school and what those guys did with their resources. It was a huge inspiration for me growing up, especially in those formative years where myself and Sam and Tom had started to come together to start to make things of our own. Those two movies, yeah, hands down, top for me.
What? How are you feeling about the new Exorcist trilogy that's coming out?
I didn't realize a new trilogy was coming out.
Yeah, it's going to be a trilogy.
The trailer looks really cool. Yeah, you know, Exorcist movies can be pretty hit and miss. Yeah, I don't like to speak badly about other films, but I think everyone can pretty universally agree Exorcist 2 left much to be desired. But Exorcist 3 are incredible. I really love the Exorcist 3. So we'll see what happens with this new one.
Yeah. Hell yeah. What about you, Sam?
I'm completely unoriginal as well. I go with my go-to is The Exorcist.
Okay.
R.I.P. Billy Friedkin, because like it's unbeatable. Like it is phenomenal, and the fact that it came out like almost 50 years ago, there's just something about it that there's such an unsettling quality about the story and the way that it was done. And there's a reason why for 50 years it's been described as the scariest movie of all time. But then my other favorite, as we talked about before, is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think that they're both in very interesting contrast as far as their production goes. Well, you know, The Exorcist was big budget Hollywood stars, and then Texas Chainsaw Massacre, small budget, you know, group of friends going out into the desert and banging together this thing. I'll throw in my favorite Australian horror movie as well, Razorback. Love it. Can't beat it.
Oh, yeah. Razorback. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Wow. That's one that not a lot of people talk about, but that's one that needs to be seeked out for people who haven't seen it. It's a good one.
It's from the director of Highlander, which, like, Highlander's got a lot of love, and it was his first movie. And it is beautiful. It is stunning. He was a music video director, and like, you can see it in Razorback, and it's not just, you know, a Jaws style ripoff or anything like that. It's really its own thing. And anyone that hasn't seen it, give it a watch.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's on a couple of streaming services right now. I think it was on Shudder. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it still is.
A distributor in Australia has just done a new 4K remaster of it.
Oh,
so,
there you go. Go pick that up. Hell yeah.
It's Umbrella Entertainment, if anyone wanted to, you know, see it in its best possible picture quality. And yeah.
Hell yeah. My favorite is always going to be Halloween 78. That movie just crafted my love of horror, scared the hell out of me. And I think that's what really brought me to it. As you see, I got a bunch of Michaels over next to me. and of course, you know, Universal Monsters. You can never go wrong with Universal, you know. But that's really interesting that you both really, really enjoy The Exorcist. And I guess, like, it kind of shows, you know, with the writing styles and everything, and because you guys are so together on everything and really crafting a well universe around something or somebody, because essentially The Exorcist is all about Reagan, you know, beaten to death is pretty much all about Jack. So I can see kind of some of those influences through your writing and directing on there. But this has been a blast, and thank you guys for being here. It's always so fun to talk to anybody that I can, and I've been getting a lot of requests from people that wanted to come on, and I was really, really looking forward to this one. When I was talking to Eric, I was like, when is this going to happen? Let me know. He's like, yeah, the guys really want to talk to you. I'm like, okay, well, give me a date. Let me know what it is. I want to talk to them. I love this film. So thank you for being here and doing this with me.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that. And thank you for the support in watching the movie and happily having a chat to us, because it's great to be able to come on and give a bit of background and a bit of insight into mine and Benny's process. So yeah, we love it, and we're happy to be on board.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, what Sam said, it's been great. it's been great.
Yeah, and anytime you guys want to come back on, whether for a future project or to come on and talk about a film, maybe The Exorcist, who knows? You know, well, we're in touch now. We're friends. You have my email and anything like that. So I'm looking forward to future chats with the both of you. This has been absolutely amazing.
I'm sure that if you ever want Benny to come on and talk about all the Halloween sequels, he will do that.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. We'll get that freaking sorted out. I would love that.
Yeah, but perfect guest star appearance.
Hell yeah. but, you know, thank you guys so much for being here. And for everybody who's listening and watching when this comes out, this has been a blast. And I'm looking forward to all the other things that you guys have done that I haven't seen yet and what's to come. So thank you so much to Welcome Villain and to Sam and Ben for being here. This has been a blast.